everyone. Welcome to People I Almost Know. I'm Michelle, and my guest today is J.R. Forresteros. I almost know J.R. from the Storymen podcast, and I was super excited when he said he would come and talk to me today about Star Trek Into Darkness. Now, fair warning, we are about to, with great pleasure, spoil the heck out of this movie. So proceed at your own risk, and let's get started. All right. Well, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
And for people who don't know you, will you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name is J.R. Forresteros, and I'm a teaching pastor in Dayton, Ohio. My wife and I moved here about 4 years ago, and I work at a Nazarene church here in a suburb of Dayton, the Gem City. So we've learned to love it and call it home. It's a really great town. I've been preaching full-time for about 3 years, and I'm a blogger. I review books and films. And I'm also a member of the Storymen, which is a podcast that I do with Matt Michelotis and Clay Morgan. And so we talk about pop culture, theology, history, which is essentially a way for us to talk about anything we want and fit it in somehow. but we really like talking about how God is everywhere. And if we're paying attention, then we can find conversations about God and about spirituality and about what it means to be human, taking place pretty much anywhere in every medium. So, that's what we talk about. I blog about that kind of stuff a lot. That's why I review books and films, because I just think that Christians need to be critical and responsible consumers of stories. And I think that a lot of people don't even realize that we're always consuming stories, no matter, even if we're just driving down the road and seeing billboards, you know, those are telling a visual story.
Yeah.
So, it's my goal to try to help people be a little bit more critical in how they read those stories and consume those stories and balance those, messages and say, okay, is this something that is true or is it not true? Or is it a little bit true or a lot of it true? And, you know, what are the redeeming values of this story? What are the things that are just a little bit silly? And then maybe what are some of the things that are really dangerous? So that's what I like to do.
Well, now I know we are supposed to be talking about, Star Trek Into Darkness, and we'll
yes.
get to that. but I want to say I have really enjoyed the Storymen, and I was pretty much hooked from that first set of videos you guys did in your basement, you know?
Yes. Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
It was good, and I just know it. You, in particular, have kind of cinematic influence over me because you get excited about things.
Oh, man, you're not kidding.
You're dangerous to me, though. And I'm thinking that in my head, I'm like, I've got probably about another year before I'm going to see a scary movie on purpose because of you and that Clay boy.
Yes. Oh, man, I love horror films. Love, love, love them, obviously.
Well, this is not a horror film we're talking about today. Okay, so we're talking about Star Trek Into Darkness, and you liked it. I loved it, too.
Yeah. Now, are you a Trekkie?
No, I'm not.
You're not? Okay.
And so that's one of the things that is good for us going back and forth, I think, a little bit, because you are, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I've always loved Star Trek.
That was my question, is how much are you into, is it the movies and the TV series?
Everything, yeah. My dad took me to see my first one, I think it was probably my first film in the theaters, was Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. And I don't know if you know this rule about the old Trek films, but the even ones are good and the odd ones are bad.
Okay.
And so if you talk to any Trek person, they say, stay away from the odd numbered movies. And that basically holds true.
Okay.
You know, so I was born after the original series was off the air and back in syndication. So my Trek was Next Generation.
Oh, okay.
I grew up with Jean-Luc Picard and Data and Geordi and Number One and all of that. So that was I cut my teeth on that. I remember when it went off the air. I remember the cliffhanger episode with the Borg that just devastated me. And then I kind of skipped the others. I've actually gone back and rewatched Deep Space Nine, which all of these are on Netflix now, right? And I would not usually admit this, but if you made me choose, I probably would choose Deep Space Nine as my favorite series overall.
Really?
Yeah. And so, you know, the last couple of Next Generation films were pretty disappointing. They took some pretty silly risks with some characters, and just the franchise just kind of tanked. And so when we heard that J.J. Abrams was taking over and rebooting the franchise, I got really excited. I loved the first movie that came out in 09. I was happy that they played with the continuity and they took all the risks that they did, resetting the timeline and all of that. I was a big fan of the way they did all that. So I was very anxious to see what they would do with Into Darkness. And of course, we'll probably have to save and do a spoilers bit towards the end where we can talk about the big secrets of the second one. But
Well, I'm ready to spoiler now.
oh, okay.
I was thinking that I was thinking before we got together that we needed to tell people in the front that there's going to be spoilers instead of doing the story men,
Which is
method
after.
of saying everything and then spoiler. Yeah. So I don't care. I say let's spoiler it up. If they haven't seen it yet, then
Too bad for them.
yeah, listener beware.
Okay, so this is all spoilers from this is the point of no return in the podcast, like after this.
Point of no
Okay.
return. Absolutely. Okay, so you answered my question is I loved the reboot that they did too, but I'm not a big fan.
Yeah, so what was your background? Like, had you seen any of it?
Now, I have not seen a single, I hate to even say this out loud to you guys, but I've not seen a single original Star Trek film. I
Okay.
know I've probably seen about half of the original series, and like if I was flipping channels and it came on, I would definitely stop and watch that kind of deal.
Yeah, sure.
But so for me, I didn't have, I was sad to see Vulcan. I was like, oh man, it destroyed his whole planet. But no more than in any other movie where they would have destroyed a planet. I was like, that's sad, but yeah, cool movie, But I know some people had real issues with that stuff.
Right. And I think it's really fascinating that there's this sort of like fanboy fanaticism that says you're not allowed to actually touch anything in the toy box. Like, when Abrams destroyed, oh, so Star Trek 3 is all about them trying to find Spock because he, I don't know how familiar you are with the Wrath of Khan, and you said you haven't seen it,
Not at
but
all.
you should now, particularly if you liked Into Darkness, because they actually reverse the end of the Wrath of Khan, and in the Wrath of Khan, Spock dies, and they don't bring him back. Like the film ends with him dead,
Ugh.
and so Star Trek 3 is them trying to find, like, figure out and bring him back, and they spend a most of that film on Vulcan. So I mean,
Oh, okay.
it's an integral part of the Star Trek universe. And so when they blew it up, like that was a stake in the ground saying, okay, we're not
Oh.
just going to send Nero back to the future. Like now things have changed irrevocably. Like there will not be a similar timeline anymore. And I
Okay.
love that. I love, why would you tell the same story? You already, if you love old Star Trek, go watch old Star Trek. Like it's great. Like no one's going to be mad at you for that. Just go do it. Why wouldn't you be excited about the opportunity to hear new stories? And as Star Trek says, to boldly go where no one has gone before, right?
Right. I'm totally on your side for that.
Yeah, I well, I'm glad to hear that. I think that I think there's a lot of new possibilities. Now, we could discuss how boldly they went where no one had gone before in Into Darkness, because I think that they instead of telling a completely new story, they've obviously gone back and revisited
Right.
the most popular installment of old Star Trek. So that's that in and of itself is an interesting choice, but
Well, okay, let me ask you one more question about the first movie
yeah.
before we move into Darkness, and that is the characters. I mean, how did you
Oh
feel
man.
as an invested Trekkie kind of guy in how the characters were now being portrayed?
I was super worried because, okay, Shatner is such an iconic figure, and his Kirk is such an iconic figure, that even Ace Ventura makes fun of it in those classic films.
Yeah.
And so I was just hopeful but terrified that all of these characters were just going to be playing caricatures of the old actors.
Right.
And I thought that they did a absolutely marvelous job of really playing the characters and not playing the actors playing the characters. You know, Chris Pine just nailed Kirk's arrogance and sort of boyish self-confidence, and that like Kirk almost wills miracles to happen in everywhere he goes. You know, it's like it. You know, Spock says, "Captain, there's almost no chance that this will work," and then Kirk says, "No, it'll work." And it's like he bends reality to his will through the sheer force of his arrogance, right?
Right.
And that was how the old Kirk was, and I think that Pine nailed that. DeForest Kelly was an amazing McCoy, but I think Carl Urban has just got that perfect balance of like crotchetiness and like warmth. Yeah, I loved them all. I loved them all.
Even his voice. I'm like, that's Bones's voice.
Right. Yeah. But not, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like DeForest Kelly doing Bones' voice. It was just like, it sounded like, somehow it sounded like this character that managed to transcend both of these actors. And that, such an incredible thing that he was able to pull off, you know, he being Abrams, I guess, and the whole crew that worked on that film. So yeah, I loved them. I thought Simon Pegg was a great Scotty.
Oh, yeah.
I thought Zoe Saldana, or I don't actually know how you say her last name, was an awesome Uhura. Zachary Quinto as Spock, like again,
Oh.
great. And those moments between Spock Prime and new Spock were just awesome. So, yeah, I loved him. Loved him, loved him.
I have to admit here, right now, that I am so madly in love with Spock. And like, not Nimoy Spock, and not, you know, Zachary as an actor
Right.
or person. I could care less about him, but I love him as Spock. I'm even the first movie, I was like, oh, I love you. It's just something about that character is very compelling
I
and
totally agree.
even more for me than Kirk. All right, so let's trek into darkness then
Let's
and
do it.
so you were how what was your opinion of them? I've read some stuff where people are like, oh, you know, they just it was a cop out kind of deal. I happen to disagree as somebody from the outside, you know, really getting into Star Trek for the first time. But what was your opinion on, you know, having Khan in there and rehashing?
So something I think a lot of people don't understand is that there was an episode of the original series called Space Seed
Right.
where Kirk and crew actually discover Khan for the first time. And then they leave Khan stranded on a planet. And so in Star Trek, the film, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, you find out that that planet, like 6 months later, that had some kind of natural disaster and it rendered it
Oh.
basically uninhabitable. And so, you know, most of Khan's crew died and he blames
Oh.
Kirk for abandoning him.
And he's a big family man.
Right. The wrath of Khan is the wrath of Khan against Kirk for marooning him on this planet, right?
Okay.
So you
Okay.
can't do that in this reset timeline because now the Enterprise hasn't found Khan's ship. They haven't, they're not the ones that awoken him. They're not the ones that abandoned him. So there's a sense in which this film is really a remake of Space Seed, not a remake of The Wrath of Khan.
Okay.
And so, you know what I mean? Like, because
Oh
there
yeah.
is no Wrath of Khan at this point. At this point, all of Khan's wrath is aimed at the Admiral for, you know, kidnapping his family and making it so hard for him to, you know, who knows why he thought it was a good idea to put them in missiles, but whatever. So
It worked for the plot, that's why.
I know, yeah, exactly, right? Because they needed him to. And so, you know, I really enjoyed the film overall. You know, I had intentionally tried to stay away from spoilers, and the film opened overseas. I think in Europe it opened a week ahead of time. So apparently, even in IMDb, Benedict Cumberbatch was listed as Khan before the film opened in the United States. But I managed to stay away from all spoilers. And I had actually sort of even forgotten going into the film that there was even the is he or isn't he discussion. And so when he says John Harrison is a fiction, I was like, oh, I forgot about this. And then he says, my name is Khan. And like in one of the people in our theater goes, oh, there's like this real audible, like, oh, like, yeah.
That's fantastic.
And so there's been a lot written on this online. Matt Singer at CriticWire wrote a great article about how that didn't work so great. And, you know, there was all this mystery created by Abrams and crew about who he is, and really that was all for the audience, because there really wasn't any need in the film itself for them to disguise his name. Like, when he said, "I'm Khan," everyone wasn't like, "Oh, that Khan?" Like, they didn't...
they don't know who he is.
No, they didn't know who he was.
Right.
So why? Like, why create a false identity for him? Why do all of these things? Except for to fool these people that are coming in to watch. So there's just, like, this weird kind of meta thing going on where the film was tricking the audience but not tricking the characters, because the characters don't need to be tricked. And, you know... For me, I still really enjoyed it. As someone who loves Wrath of Khan, who's seen it probably like 10 times, the third act of Into Darkness was really emotionally effective, because instead of Spock being the one who gives himself up and the needs of the many outweighed the needs of the one, you have Kirk. And on my blog, when I reviewed this film, I said I thought it was really interesting because, you know, the Trek films are set when the crew's a lot older, and so the Wrath of Khan is all about mortality. It actually opens with the Kobayashi Maru maneuver, which they actually reference in the first film as this unwinnable scenario that Kirk legendarily beat. He's the only person who ever beat it, and you don't know for most of the film how he beat it. It's just like it's you know, they say it's an unwinnable scenario. It's to see how you react when you can't change, when you can't escape your fate. And then all they say is that Kirk beat it, though. And there's this big mystery around how did Kirk beat the Kobayashi Maru. But then it immediately goes to outside of the thing, and it's Kirk's birthday, and he has to wear reading glasses, and they're making a big deal out of how he's really struggling with his mortality, and he's really struggling with that he can't do the things that he used to be able to do, and he is growing old, and he really resents the passing of time. So then when you get to the end of the film and Spock dies, and you find out that Kirk only beat the impossible scenario by changing the rules, it becomes this really interesting reflection on mortality and how death is the one thing that no one can cheat. And it's this thing that the older you get, the larger it looms in your life.
Right.
And then Kirk and crew have to face the inevitability of Spock's death. So it becomes this like really kind of powerful, poignant reflection on growing old. Obviously Into Darkness couldn't do that because the crew's all still young.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was interesting that they took the third act of Into Darkness and they ended up turning it into a film about growing up. You know, there's all this stuff at the beginning where Kirk's cocky, he breaks the rules because they don't, he does change the rules all the time because they don't apply to him, so he thinks. And there's all of this, you know, you're sitting in the captain's chair, but you don't deserve it, and so they take it away from him just so they can give it back a few minutes later, and, you know, that's all a little bit of a mess from a plot perspective, but the theme is really shining through that Kirk just doesn't get it. You know, he doesn't understand what it means to be a leader, what it means to be a grown-up, what it means to be a man. And so, and sort of then with the whole crew as family thing, he doesn't know what it means to be a father. So then they put him in the spot at the end where the only way he can win this unwinnable scenario and save his family, his crew, his people that he's leading is to, you know, sacrifice himself. And so he learns that, you know, to be a leader, to be a man, to be a father is to pay the ultimate price and give yourself up for the lives of the people that you're leading or fathering or whatever. And so it's a nice... You know, it ends up being a nice. This is what it means to grow up. I didn't mind that they did the triple con magic blood triple bring him back to life thing right away, particularly because I already saw a Star Trek movie where the main character died at the end. You know, that was Star Trek 2, and I don't need to see that again. So I was fine with them seeding that all the way through. You know, it opens with Khan's blood healing this girl. It brings the Tribble back to life. It was a little bit clunkily done, but a lot of people were like, oh, magic blood, pretty convenient, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, it's science, sci-fi, whatever. Like,
yeah, you can do whatever you want. That's the reason we watch this stuff.
Right. And I think it still worked. His death scene was still important and still meaningful and still valuable because Spock and Kirk in that moment don't know about it, you know?
Right.
And so for them, it is still final and they're still having to deal with it. And, you know, it is a part of Trek lore that the reason that the Vulcans have denied their emotions is because they're too powerful. That's the sort of the lore in Star Trek going back on Planet Vulcan was that it was a completely like savage, barbaric people, and they were united under a man who taught them to suppress their emotions and
Okay.
become like these cool, logical, non-emotional people. So when he tells Uhura, I ignore my emotions because I feel too much, not because I don't feel anything. And so when you finally get to see Spock let loose at the end and become just this really savage, barbaric, like no holds barred, kind of killer, like it was a nice, I don't know, it was a nice part of the Trek mythology that I think doesn't usually get tapped into. So
Love Spock, but anyway.
I don't know. So I'm curious, for you, not having seen Wrath of Khan, not having all of that sort of background story to draw from, you still said you really enjoyed the film.
I loved it.
Like, what were the things that really worked for you so much?
For me, for one thing, not having seen all that other thing, all this, the rest, the earlier films, it made me want to go back and catch up on my history, and
Oh yeah, okay.
I can separate out the two timelines, but now I want to know what happened on the in the alternate universe. But for me, I tell you, the first time I was watching it, about midway through, maybe the first third to midway through, I said to myself, "Man, I can't wait to see how this ends, but I hope it never ends," you know. And this, I saw it again in 3D because you had seen it in 3D, and I said, well, I want to see how that's different. And about midway through, and when I was watching the second one, I thought, I know what's happening, and I'm still so excited, and I can't wait to watch this again. I'm like, Michelle, you haven't finished seeing it this time. You're in the middle of watching it, and you
Yeah.
can't wait to see it again. But I thought the action was great. There's definitely some issues with the storytelling. There's definitely some things in this movie that are there strictly to tell the story that they want to tell and to set up, action for the future. Definitely, in my mind, there's no reason that they needed to be under the water, but it was pretty cool.
That was
It was really cool. I mean, I don't care because it was so cool. But going into it, I hadn't really, I'm like you, I hadn't read anything, I hadn't looked at anything, I hadn't really paid attention to anything, but I had in my head that he was going to be Khan. I was expecting it.
Oh, okay.
So it wasn't a really big surprise. It was more for me a thrill when he said, "I'm Khan." I was thrilled and excited, more than surprised.
So, but you knew who Khan was?
I knew that there was a movie, The Wrath of Khan, and that,
Oh,
he was a really
okay.
bad guy. That's all I knew.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I'm gonna find out about Khan. And so the action was good, the movie was good, it was a fun, thrilling ride, but I really super, super enjoyed the fact that I felt the relationships and the characters really went smoothly from the first movie to the second movie, and I could see these relationships growing, and I could see the characters growing. Definitely Spock and Kirk relationship evolving and continuing to grow into the end of the movie, when Kirk dies. And here's another thing. I tell you, I knew he's going to be brought back to life. As soon as he said to, Kirk said to Bones, "What are you doing with that thing?" And he was injecting the dead thing with
Right,
the,
right.
I was like, oh, well, and then when Scotty says, "You'll be dead before you get up the ladder," I said, well, we'll bring him back with the blood. So you know what's going to happen, and I cried anyway.
Right, oh yeah.
And the second time I saw it, I'm like, Spock and Kirk. I mean, I didn't boo-hoo, but I teared up, and I'm like, Michelle, you're such a girl. But I loved it.
No, I did too. That was a really well done scene. And I feel like, all the silly plot holes and all that stuff aside, like you were right, the relationships were really the core of the film, and that's what works so well.
Oh
And
yeah.
so yeah, when they get to that point, and he tells Spock he's afraid, I was just like, oh gosh, here it comes. Like, that was such a great, great, great moment. Really well done. And really,
Yeah, it was.
I thought earned, the emotion between those two and the friendship between them was earned.
Oh, yeah.
More even than Kirk's own character arc. I didn't necessarily buy like him growing up. Like I was like, I see what you want me to see. I just don't really, but I don't buy it quite. But like the character stuff, totally bought into. You know, thought it was great.
Well, you know, and I disagree with you there. Well, from me, because what I was looking at is Kirk from, you know, the kid in the first movie to the captain at the end of the movie who says, of the second movie, who says, you know, do, it's not them, it was me, just don't hurt my people. And I saw, for me, what I saw is in the first movie, he's this brash guy, and he basically inherited that ship, and his crew didn't trust him, but he kind of gained their trust at the end. But then in the beginning of this movie, he's almost at the same point where he's the captain because he's the captain. And when
Right.
he goes into revenge mode, he does things, he uses the captaincy to get what he wants for his revenge. And it
Right.
doesn't matter what the other people say. He, you know, Spock is, when they're looking at the weapons, and Spock is like trying to talk to him, he's like, go to the bridge. Spock obeys him because he's the captain. And that's the whole reason he and Scotty get into it, because Scotty's like, please, you got to listen to me. And he is still in revenge mode. He's like, well, I'm not going to listen to you. If you won't
Right.
quit, bye. I don't think the captain at the end of the movie would have said that to Scotty. I think he was a little bit,
Right.
like in the beginning, Pike says, you don't respect the chair. And I felt like at the end of the movie, he really learned that, maybe.
I totally agree. I think that was the biggest difference between Kirk at the beginning and Kirk at the end. I'm just not, you know, I guess we're supposed to think that he learned that when his ship got blown out of the sky.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Like, okay, I guess. Again, I get it. It just what like by the end I was like, well, is one like really bad thing enough to teach him the lesson? I guess it is. Sure. You know, it's enough for some people.
I don't know. I'm gonna have to watch it again.
Me too.
Oh, darn. That's too bad. I will have to give this some more thought because that does make sense. And maybe, like you said, I'm seeing what they want me to see, and I'm just accepting it because I'm so gung-ho into it, into that idea.
Well, yeah, and you know, the same thing. The first time through, I was like, okay. And you know, when you've got all of the other great character moments, who cares? You know, it wasn't a perfect film, but it was way more than good enough for me.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Now, what did you th have you been reading online, or were you bothered by the Carol Marcus character?
I don't really care one way or the other. She's that I like her fine as a character. I don't know that she's I don't know what's going to happen with her going forward, but I'm willing to find out. I think that whole thing with the bra and panties scene, it was ridiculous and stupid, and I think that was a misstep on Abrams' part. But it for me, that was just one of those things that there's almost always going to be something in a film that I'm like, if I were the editor, I would have cut that out. But whatever.
Right.
I mean, as a woman, I don't really care one way or the other. Y'all do what you want.
I saw it in the trailer, of course, and I kind of rolled my eyes. Now, again, since you haven't seen Star Trek II, Carol Marcus is in Star Trek II, and you
Oh, so
find
this is a
out,
real thing.
right, and you find out that she is the mother of Kirk's adult son.
Oh, really? Okay.
So, when they announced that there was this blonde girl in Star Trek who looks an awful lot like a younger version of Carol Marcus from Star Trek II, you know, immediately there was speculation, then she was confirmed as Carol Marcus. And so when they shot that scene in the trailer, I thought, okay, well this must be like they must be developing like some sort of a romantic subplot between her and Kirk or something, like whatever. I was expecting there to be something. And then when the scene happened and she like literally she was just undressing so that Kirk could turn around and look at her, and then they just moved on and never mentioned it again. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, it
Rip
couldn't
off.
be. Well, no, my actual thought was like that's the very definition of gratuitous. Like, there was
Oh, yeah.
absolutely no point at all. Like, that did not serve the story. And like, it was literally just so you could put a brawn panty shot in the trailer. Like, that's the only reason that scene existed. And so I was offended on, like, a story level. Yeah. And then also as a person who's in the target demographic that they think I'm so easily manipulated, I was like, I'm ashamed of my species. Like, shame on me and on us.
And see, I don't really take that stuff too seriously, but except for the story, you know, the story aspect of it, that I take more seriously than, you know, that they're trying to pander.
Yeah, I guess they will always be pandering. So,
well, there was something else I meant to just ask you. How did you feel about Pike biting the dust?
You know, I liked the actor. I liked the character. Pike was, I assume you don't, since you said you don't follow the series stuff much, in the original pilot, the captain of the Enterprise was Christopher Pike. And then when they got picked up, they recast and put James T. Kirk as, played by William Shatner in the show.
Oh.
And so it ended up becoming this sort of like lore that the original captain of the Enterprise was Chris Pike, and then they actually run into him during the original series at one point. He's like stranded on this planet and he's paralyzed and all this kind of stuff. So so when they had him in the first film as the captain of the Enterprise, and it was kind of a nice callback, and then when you thought he got paralyzed at the end of the movie, that was a kind of a nice allusion, but then he's walking again in this one. So I liked him being included. As soon as he sits in the bar and calls Kirk son and all this stuff, I thought, well, he's not long for this world, because, you know, they'd made it pretty clear that the whole Into Darkness thing was that this is Kirk's trajectory into the darkness of the human heart, right?
Okay, yeah.
And that quote that he says at the end of the film, where he says, there's always going to be people that want to hurt us, but if we're not careful in fighting against them, we become the very thing that we're fighting against. And so he had to have some more personal motivation for revenge than just like they attack Starfleet, because
right.
That's just not enough for a guy like Kirk. You know, they have to come after his family. Well, you're obviously also not going to kill off any of the crew. And obviously Red Shirt's dying doesn't matter.
That's what they're there for.
So like, it was just the number of people. Right, exactly. The number of people that could be killed and have it matter to Kirk was a fairly short list. So I liked it. I thought it worked as a plot point. I'm sad to see the actor go, but at the same time, I feel that the films are positioned now moving forward to do a bunch of new stuff. You know, Pike's gone. Kirk has the Enterprise and has earned it. Let's go do some cool stuff. I hope they don't, as much as I would like to see them come back in time to get some whales, maybe landing in 2013 or 15 or 16 or whatever. I hope that they don't do that. I hope they do something else, but we'll see.
Well, and that was kind of my final thing is, you know, at the end of the movie, I felt like they had set it up to go, boldly go where they have not been before. And
That's right.
I felt like with all these people talking about, oh, you know, they should have done something original. I kept thinking, you know, when this is all said and done, this is going to be movie two. This is a middle movie. I don't feel like in number two, we need to have to, you know, immediately ditch everything. I so loved, you know, the look back and setting up the foundation. And another thing I loved is that they froze Khan at the end.
Right.
Because, you know, if this were my series, when I was done, Khan would be in the last movie. That's how I'm ending the whole thing.
You'll do a Wrath of Khan, right?
There you go. And then you wrap it all back up in a nice, pretty package of going back to the beginning again. Of course, it's not mine, unfortunately.
You're waiting for the call, right?
I've been waiting. I'm sitting here waiting.
JJ's taking over Star Wars, so they need someone. They might as well hire you.
Well, so that's my question to you is where, and I guess you kind of answered it. I mean, is this really totally new adventure land? They're going to be out there in space, all new movies, and...
Well, you know, I hope so. But part of the problem is they've intentionally set themselves in a particular time when the Federation is still young, when they're still exploring, like, the far reaches of space that they're exploring in this new 5-year mission that they started at the end of Into Darkness is the 5-year mission that they went on in the series. So all of the things that they encountered in the series are out there waiting to be encountered.
Oh.
They have this war with the Klingon Empire building. They have to deal with the Romulans. They have a long way to go before they get where we've never gone before as viewers, because we've seen 100 years into the future.
Okay.
So I'm just really curious to see what they do. And I really hope, again, something I assume you didn't catch because you're not an insane fanboy like me. the Tribble came from a smuggler named Mud, and they referenced him when they take the smuggler ship down to the Klingon homeworld. They say we're using a ship that we
I remember that Mud.
Yeah, that what they say, okay. That they
that's Mud ship.
Yeah, they took from the Mud incident, and so the Tribble and the Mud, and then that was his ship. That was what his ship looked like. So that was a really cool way to me to like do something new while still reminding us of the old. You know, that was a nice, like, if you didn't catch it, who cares? Like, you still get it, and it's fine. It's still really enjoyable. But if you're a insane fan of the old series that knows all that stuff, it's a nice little like nudge and a wink to say like, see, like this is still the same universe, and even though things are different, things are also still the same. So I'd like to see them do some stuff like that where they do tell new stories, but they keep the shadows of the old in there. So
well, no, and I love that because it makes you feel like you belong, like you're an insider,
right?
And this belongs to you because you get it, you know.
Exactly.
Well, I'm going to have to go back and catch up with some old Trek movies.
I think it's all on Netflix. I think it is. So,
okay.
Yeah. And again, just stick to the even ones and you'll be fine.
All right. Anything else from you?
I think that's it. It was a great movie. If you guys haven't seen it, sorry we spoiled it all for you, but you should still go see it.
I'm not sorry. I had fun talking about it.
Well, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun to talk with you about Star Trek.
Oh, no, thank you. Thank you very much. And JR, it's jrforesteros.com.
That's correct. And I'm on Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff. So.
And I'll link all that in storymen.us.
That's right.
And I have to tell you that of all the storymen, you are definitely in my top 3 favorite.
Yes. That's always been my goal.
It has been?
Yep.
My other 2 favorites are Matt and Clay, but that's it.
They're also great choices. I would be hard-pressed to pick among them.
All right, JR, thank you so much.
Thank you, Michelle. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye. That was so much fun, you guys. My thanks to JR Forresteros. And if you'd like to meet other people I almost know, you can look us up on iTunes or in the Stitcher app or at peopleialmostknow.com.